Park, and this is Francis Pena, organizer of this rally, and this Camarillo Southwest Voter Project, and lots of important people here. You know, here's Benny Solis, and somebody I stepped on. Who are you that I stepped on?
Nadia.
Nadia. Well, excuse me for stepping on you. I didn't see you. And then we've got another politician, mira. La K, there we go. We got finally found her. Juan Telcito. Where did he go? Where's the representative? He's over there. It's the representative, Ciro Rodriguez, back there. And all these wonderful people that are here, you know, at this rally. Su voz es su voto. This is 10:30 in the morning, 4th of July. People registering. That literature table back here. Publisher, San Antonio Post newspaper.
I'm very happy to be here. I welcome each and every one of you.
And Commissioner Albert Pena,
Jr. All our new American citizens, and as someone said a while ago, it's a great day to be an American. It's a great day. I'm a little sorry to hear about all this immigration bashing. And I've always felt that it's an appeal to racism. I hate to say that, but that's what it is. It's an appeal to racism.
¿Está registrado para votar, señor?
Sí.
Cuando vota, ¿tiene manera de que salir a votar? ¿O son en noviembre, pero hay, lo que le quiero explicar es que hay tres maneras de votar?
I understand we will have no immigration into Texas. Anyone with a different color that crashes our border, and we're going to put a fence around it, we're either going to beat them up or kill them. If that would have happened, we would not have had an Alamo. We would not have had a San Jacinto. We would not have had a Crockett or a Travis. We would not have had any immigrants. We would all be legal. But it didn't happen that way. And it's unfortunate. It's unfortunate that we have all this immigrant fashion. But to a great extent, it's a fault of the Hispanics. The reason I say that, while we are registering a lot of people, every day we register people, and they're very excited about it. But on election day, unfortunately, most of them, but one-third, take a siesta. So there isn't much you can say about this sleeping giant. The fact is, it's sleeping on election day. We've got to stop having these fiestas on election day and vote, because only one-third of us vote. And until all of us vote, we're going to have this type of immigration bash. Immigration bash.
Chasing Francis Pena, because she's is going to open up a treasure trove of material. This is a nonpartisan rally we were at, though. So therefore, some of the partisan activity. You were asked to give me this.
I was asked to give you these if I see you here.
Well, let's see what it is you're going to give me. Maybe. maybe I'll have problems also.
No, I was asked to give you these.
This taping is for the University of Texas at Arlington Video Archives, and part of the project that we focus on is Mexican-American women in politics. So I do want to interview you if you have a few minutes, even if it's briefly.
This is from, these were from some friends of Victor.
Oh, Victor Morales stickers. All right, you can give me some, sure.
This is the Mezquite, Washington, send Victor Morales to the U.S. Senate.
Great, great, yeah.
And, this was a contribution. They said that the friends are anonymous.
Uh-huh.
It says paid for by...
Look at that, the Mezquite of Washington, right?
Paid for by friends of Victor.
Great.
And, deseándole, they said to tell you, que le digamos que le deseamos mucha suerte.
I'll be glad to take it to him.
There should be about 1,000 here, or a little less than 1,000.
Excellent.
That's what they told me.
Do you have a few minutes now, or do you want to wait till after your rally?
We can wait till after the rally.
What time would that be?
You know? In a little while.
Okay.
In a little while.
All right.
Thank you.
Thank you. The voice is Frances Peña. She just started speaking at her rally. I was at the opposite end. So, excuse me.
We have gotten away from what this day really means. This is a day, really, that is a day of celebration. It's a sad day. It makes me think of all our soldiers, our privates, our corporals. Nuestra gente de habla hispana, de habla español, que dieron de tanto de sus vidas. Solamente en Vietnam, 25,000 Mexican Americans died. For us to be here today to celebrate.
Doing second part, truncated part, divided part, Francis Guajardo Peña. The battery ran out as you were making your speech, and I apologize for that. I also didn't have time to get you to sign the release or the donation of this video, but you're volunteering to do this interview for the archives at the University of Texas at Arlington. This is the project for the Center for Mexican-American Studies on Mexican-Americans in politics, and in your case, Mexican-American women in politics, because you are Doña in politics and have been for a long time.
Yes.
And you organized this rally on the 4th of July, 1996. We're in the amphitheater of the San Jose Mission. And I guess first we need for you to say yes, you're willing to donate this.
Yes, I am willing to do it.
Okay, so you're volunteering with no invasion of privacy. You're doing all of this because you want to do
this. Because I want to do it.
All right. The tape and the video will be unedited. It'll be transcribed, and that'll be your archive at that library, sixth floor, Special Collections, University of Texas. Why are we at San Jose Mission and on the 4th of July of all places? Why aren't we out there with picnics, fireworks, drinking beer?
The reason for that, Jose, is because we have to get back to basics. We have to remember where we came from. I have been telling everybody that we've gotten away from what the 4th of July is. The 4th of July is not a day for picnics. It's like I've said, too many of our gente de habla hispana gave of their lives, you know, like I said today. They gave of their lives. Too many Mexicanos se mataron in World War I, World War II. And for us to sit here in this mission today, to me, is a big accomplishment of how far we've come. And to place a mere wreath at the tomb of the unknown soldier is a slap in the face to us. La gente de habla hispana, nosotros los chicanos, mexico-americanos, como quiera que nos quieran nos llamar, pero es la gente nuestra. A mí me da mucha tristeza en este día de pensar que es un día tan triste porque tantos hombres que se fueron a pelear para nosotros tener el derecho de la libertad. And on this day we go out and we barbecue. Or we can't wait for the 4th of July to take off to go to Cancun, Acapulco, or Puerto Vallarta, or Aruba. Or to get drunk. The day is going to come when we're not going to have the 4th of July. It's going to be taken away, like our voting rights, if we don't exercise them.
You're doing this with the voting rights group, the Southwest Voter Project.
I started with the Southwest Voter Registration, and then we went and formed a committee to educate on voting rights and procedures. Because we
What's
feel
that name?
That's the committee to educate on voting rights and procedures. And we're like an umbrella group, and we're nonpartisan, non-political. And what we do is we come out to all, we're targeting the new U.S. citizens. And what we do is we go to the swearing-in ceremonies. Thanks to Judge Orlando Garcia, the Honorable Orlando Garcia, who allowed us to come in there.
Federal judge.
Yes, a federal judge. Fíjate, that before September of 95, I had taken about 50 people to become U.S. citizens. And I would see the ceremony, and I would see them get their envelope, and I would see the Daughters of the American Revolution and the Daughters of the Texas Pilot Club sit up at the front by the judge, by the federal judge. At that time, when I used to attend more often, on my own, I used to pick up people off the street that I knew that weren't citizens. And that's since 1982. I've been doing this, and I've been telling them, there's going to come a time when they're going to say no more. And the door's going to be shut, and you're going to be caught with your toe in the door, and they're going to slap you back and say sorry. And so we started that. We started going into to the swearing-in ceremonies, taking more people on our own, my husband and I. And one day I stopped somebody, and I said, let me look at your voter registration card.
Now, you weren't married to Albert then?
No.
Who were you married to then?
Chetzi Guerra from Corpus. And I said, let me look at your voter registration card. And it was such an outdated card. I mean, it even asked for the report of entry, court dates. And I said, this has got to go. So then I've been married to Albert now 2 years. May the 25th was 2 years for us. And I told Albert, and we were having a hard time trying to get into immigration. And he spoke to Orlando Garcia, and he said, I don't see a problem with it. They can come in there with their group and register them. So now we not only give them the card, but with a handful of people, por eso te digo que todavía querer es poder. Si tú quieres hacer algo, you don't need 100 people. You don't need 15 people. You have to have people that are willing from the heart. We have to go back to basics. You don't need a lot of money. You just have to have bodies and the willingness, the corazón de ver. You have to give back what you got from this country. So empezamos a ir, we started registering them, and this finally, we found a group. We felt that it was also important to give them their first United States flag. And this June the 26th, we had 1,200 new United States citizens at Laurie Auditorium. And with about 20 firefighters and about 15 people from Southwest Voter Registration and the Committee to Educate on Voting Rights and Procedures, we registered almost 1,000, very short of 1,000. And everybody, I would say from that group, because the judge didn't tell us that there were some people sitting up in the balcony, we lost 200. If not, if we'd have known that they were up there, usually that area is reserved for their guests, we would have had 100%, which to us is awesome. But we have to take it further. We have to teach them how to vote. Nuestra gente es tímida, no es como la pintan, que somos agresivos, peleoneros, que no sé cuándo se oye que es rara, yo no sé, que se oye, sí se oye de que un policía mata a un mexicano, ya esposado, lo hemos visto muchas veces, lo vimos en Crystal City, ahorita está mi hermano Tony Guajardo peleando una causa de Medina County, where a sheriff deputy blew this guy's face. We have it on video. He was handcuffed already, and he got charged with assault on a police officer. Got 12 years. The police officer blew his right face away. So these are things still haven't changed. They just kept quiet, and that's why I say that July the 4th is not a day for a picnic. It's a day for us to sit down, and we have to get the people back. We have to get their self-esteem back, that we can do it, that all these programs that are being cut, the bilingual program, the affirmative action, that's a slap in the face.
Who are the inner city advocates?
The inner city advocates is a group of people at the Mexican-American Unity Council. And they're
made
out of
that?
No, my husband, Albert.
I'll call Vicky. I have his car number. Where is the other one?
Let me turn this up a bit.
No para mexicanos, right?
You want to say
okay,
it on tape?
The inner city advocates is different groups. I understand there's a different, it's like an umbrella group. They have like Peter Vallecillo with immigration and refugee rights.
I know he's on there. Southwest voter registration is on there. I know people on Watch, Kay Turner's group is in there. I know there's about 20 groups now that belong to the Inner City Advocates. Oh, the students from Mecha, the Bessel students from the university are there. And I know there's many groups. There's about 24 groups.
And all right, well, let's go back and talk a little bit about your own biography. When were you born, where did you come from, and your parents and all that?
I was born in 1947. I was born at home, La Calle Guadalupe. I was educated and raised on the west side. And the reason that I guess this is in my blood is because my father, who was like 23 years older than my mother, married my mother. My mother was from the west side, okay? My father moved there. And he helped it cuando San Antonio eran colonias. If you remember, Edgewood was as far as, you know, that people would go. People would go like to the what is now the San Fernando Cemetery to go bring the water. Well, my father was one of the men that was instrumental in getting the water and the electricity. And one of the ways that he was instrumental, mi papá se llamaba José Manuel Guajardo. One of the ways that he was instrumental in doing this is by empowering the people. And I still believe very much in that. That the only way you can control a person is by keeping them ignorant. It's like Martin Luther King said, darkness does not drive out darkness. And my father at that time, he sold real estate. He was a notario público. He had gone to law school, arreglaba causas. En ese tiempo no se necesitaban los títulos como ahora, ¿verdad? Y entonces he would help the people to get their poll tax. At that time, I remember I was a little girl, and the poll tax was like $1.75, and they would earn like $3 a week, okay? And so my father would help them to get their poll tax.
Where were your grandparents from?
My grandparents eran de Lampazos, Mexico, on my father's side.
What state is that?
Nuevo León, del estado de Nuevo León.
When did they come over?
They came, well, my father died in 1985, Jose Angel, and he was 96. So you can imagine, pero mis abuelos vinieron de Baz, de España, por lado mi papá. My mother's family, they were part Indian, they were Mexican Texans, that you might say. And, pero más me acuerdo del más de la cultura de mi papá y lo que nos enseñó, because even though my mother ran the house, my father ran our minds. You know what I'm saying? My mother was a disciplinarian, but my father was the one that would make us move. And he would say, you know, this is what you have to do, and you have to get involved. And see, we don't get involved, les van a quitar. Nosotros nos vamos a ir. Y si ustedes no se educan, no se enseñan a votar, no mueven la gente, les va a pasar algo. It's inevitable. I can see that's happening to us now.
So where did you go to school?
After I left Brackenridge High School, I went 2 years to San Antonio College, and I got my associates. I went to Incarnate Word College in my junior year. My senior year, I went to St. Mary's University. I got married in, let's see, 1969 to my first husband. I have a son. He's 26, my only child. He's kind of, this is in his blood too, you know, because he was raised in the rallies, raised.
Well, who were you active with? What did you do during your high school or college year?
Okay, I was involved with the Mexican American Unity Council in Los Barrios, con Manco, con Mog, Raza Unida. I mean, those were our roots.
What did you andábamos think of that?
Andábamos with the Brown Berets. He loved it. He loved it. He was happy to see everybody getting involved. My father would say that it didn't matter. It took everybody's efforts. It was a coalition.
What problems did you have because you were a woman involved in all this?
Really, I didn't see any problems with us. En ese tiempo andaba Mario Compián, Mario Cantú, Rosy Castro, Ernie Cortez, Juan Patlán, Albert Peña. You know, we didn't have affirmative action then. When they told you, we had a proposal to do, we all pitched in, we all did it, we all helped each other. They didn't have the computer at that time, so you had to sit at the typewriter and type what they gave you to type.
What did you do with these groups?
Okay,
so
when I was,
what did you do exactly?
Okay, when I was with the Mexican American Unity Council, I started there first. With the Mexican American Unity Council, I was involved as an assistant manpower director under Darío Chapa. I remember Darío Chapa, when I first met him, he had a proposal that he'd been carrying under his I guess his left armpit for the longest time, and all this guy wanted was $350,000. This was in 1970, from the Department of Labor to fund a school, a building and construction trade school. It was called Project Learn to Build. And what he proposed to do was to take 125 ex-felons and get them involved in the building and construction trades, but having masters teach them into a journeyman, from an apprenticeship into a journeyman program. And I said, well, what's the problem? A todos les enseñaba el proposal. And he said, well, I have to get the unions to endorse me. I said, so do it. He said, they won't, because they have an apprenticeship program too. And I said, give me a week, I'll do it. And I said, and he said, bueno, mira, he said, I'll make a deal with you. If you can get the unions to endorse me, to get a letter, I need a letter from the five unions, which was the masons, the electricians, the plumbers, bricklayers, and the carpenters, to endorse me. He said, en ese tiempo estaba Finis Jolly with the Department of Labor. He said, if you can get them to endorse me, he said, I can go with those letters to Department of Labor and they'll cut me a check. And you can be my assistant manpower director. And I said, okay, Darío, give me your hand. And we shook on it. And I would say a week later, I threw the letters on his desk. He couldn't believe it.
How'd you get them?
I just went and I talked to them. I say that it was divine providence, you know. It was divine providence, because afterwards, these same guys wanted to take us to court and to say that they didn't know. They didn't know. I mean, how could I? I mean, I was ignorant of the building and construction trades. That's why I feel that it was, the time was right. And they gave us the letters and we began to build that project. It was a very successful project. I stayed there with Darío. We did other projects, you know, as an assistant manpower director. But that was my very first, you know. Then another thing that I did, I worked with also with under Darío Chapa as my director, with a Job 70 program that the Department of Labor had. And with this, you would go out into the community and you would find a business, a small business, and the Department of Labor, like for instance, the businessman would pay $1 of the hour, and the Department of Labor would match, you know, the other part. Like if you pay that, if that businessman wanted to pay him $6 an hour, Department DOL would pay him $12, would match with the other six, and it would be $12. So they would learn good skills. So I was able to write about 60 Job 70 programs. I was able to get 60 businessmen, you know, all over to endorse our program. I did that, and it went very well. In fact, I've run into some people that are like master carpenters that I was able to get in, like into a cabinetry mill, and they got a master's in carpentry, and they went on. And it's funny, but you know, I don't remember them, but sometimes I'm out in the street and they come and they say, Señora, you know, ¿se acuerda de mí? And I tell them, you know, I don't remember you. And they tell me who they are and they say, le quiero dar las gracias. You know? And then I've worked, when I wasn't in sales, I was in social work. Okay, I've done a lot of things. But see, I feel that I've done a lot of things, but I still, there's things that I still want to do.
Such as?
I'd like to learn to fly.
Airplanes? Oh,
yes. I want to fly. Before I die, I want to do that.
Well, you got a long way to go.
That's what I want to do.
Were you involved in any electoral campaigns of,
yes.
Maria Antonieta Ozabal, Henry Cisneros, or the Rasunida Party you mentioned?
Okay.
What electoral work have you done?
Okay. When in the 70s, we helped Albert Peña a lot. We helped him with it when he was commissioner. And
did you like him already from way back?
Oh, he was my hero.
But you were married.
I was married, but I was afraid of him. I was afraid of him. I was, you know, I could feel that he was a very powerful man. He he was. And he always was surrounded by so many men. They used to kind of scare me, really. Le tenía miedo, le tenía respeto, pero a la vez le tenía miedo. You know, we were very good friends, very, very good friends. He tells me a story. When I was married to my husband, my son's father, I was at the Ship Ahoy restaurant in Corpus. I had moved down there and with my husband. And they had a chain of jewelry stores called Green's Jewelers. And we were at the Ship Ahoy, and I saw Albert with his son, Albert III. They were having dinner there, and I asked Jesse if I could get up and say hello to them. And he said, yes, so I went. And I said, and my husband said then that he told me, that his son said, who is that lady? And he said, I don't know, but someday she's going to be my wife. Isn't that funny? And I said, oh, shut up. But anyway.
Is that why you asked permission of your husband to go over there? I mean, that sounds strange. You asked permission
no,
to go talk to
no,
him.
I didn't have, I never had anything to do with Albert. Really. We, like
while
I said,
we're on the subject,
I always have admired him.
How did you get back together again, and why did you decide to marry him?
We always stayed in touch. You know, when I knew that people were in trouble, like for instance, I worked with the Women's Employment Network, and I used to get, he was a judge, and I used to get people that needed counseling, and I would call him, or they had gotten into serious problems, you know, I would call him, and he would say, well, take this person to, you know, so-and-so, maybe this person can help them, and so I would take them, you know, and we always have stayed in touch. We always had a platonic relationship, and I guess that's why we got married, but I always respected him, and he's quite a scholar. He's a brilliant man. Brilliant man. He's, sometimes we just sit and we talk, and he tells me so many things like he tells me when he was in the Navy, and he said, you know, things about that happened to him when he was in school, when he was at Tech, and how he would get out of the classroom because even then they didn't have good teachers. He didn't. He was a gang member. He tells me about what happened to him. He tells me about the experience when they landed in World War II. He tells me about the experience when they were at the Resaca at San Pedro Park, and he was in a gang called the River Rats. There were girls and boys at the time. And he says that they remembered when the Pearl Harbor, and he said that they were together. It was about 100 of them. And they said, you know what, vamos a darle a los japoneses, you know where. And he said that they went and they signed up. Y se los llevaron a todos. And he said that only he and this other guy, Joe something, that works in the court of Judge Machado, are the only ones alive from that gang. Most of them got killed in the first wave. But he tells me other stories, you know, about when, you know, when he started his campaign, about adventures, you know, that he had, and things that happened, good experiences, bad experiences.
Has he told you why he and Henry's B got into odds with each other?
Well, you know, my parents loved Henry B. I remember when my mother would get all worked up to go to organize his PTAs on the west side. Y me acuerdo when she would say, voy a venir el congresista, you know, and my father was a very dear friend of his. And Henry was a very well-respected man, you know. And I just feel that I have never heard my husband, okay, to badmouth Henry B. To talk negatively about him. I just feel that they are two different individuals. They're different, you know, just like you and I are different, and like everybody's different, and they have different ways of. But Albert tells me about when he used to go and campaign for Henry B. And when he used to go and raise funds for him, and when he helped him to become a congressman, and every chance that he gets to say something good about the congressman, he does. And I just feel that the time will come when one day they'll stand side by side and se den un abrazo. Yo creo que, yo no los he visto juntos en mi época, okay? Nunca los he visto que hablen on the same platform. But I believe that they share the same common cause, which is the cause of la causa del pueblo.
You mentioned earlier that you'd gone to Corpus Christi to live. What happened there in that period of time? What did you do in Corpus
when I worked with my husband in Corpus, I was not involved.
What years
in the, it was, let me see, 1970 through 74. I was not involved. We had opened another store for his parents. But I was involved in this way, que venía la gente de, abrimos una tienda in off of Ayers, in Mission Mall. And it was a little mall that had just gotten started. The store was Green's Jewelers. It belonged to his parents. We opened it. Y venía mucha gente de Robstown. Ellos decían que eran de Robstown, de Alice. Y eran gente muy linda que yo no conocía. Pero cuando vivía en Corpus, me daba tanta tristeza de ver más el racismo que aquí. No lo había visto tanto hasta que me fui a Corpus. Y en Corpus la gente era muy diferente en esa época, y me imagino que todavía. Y yo me acuerdo que en ese tiempo hasta venían a la tienda muchas mujeres a verme. Venían a verme because they felt that I was different. And I think they felt that I could speak my mind. It was like a they were like, how can I tell you? It's like San Antonio and Laredo. There's a big difference. It's Laredo sometimes me da tristeza. They're like 20 years behind us. And I felt that Corpus almost two and a half hours away or 2 hours away. And the people are so different. You know, they don't speak up. You can still see that at that time it was Dr. Garcia and the Bonillas who told the people what to do. And if you, like for instance, if you would see their Chamber of Commerce, eran puros anglosajones. And in fact, my son lives in Corpus, and he went to go visit his father. Ya le faltaba a little bit to get his master's from the University of Texas in Austin, and he went to some of the Chamber of Commerce meetings representing his father, and he would stand out, and he would tell me, "Mother, you know this year." I used to tell him, "You're going to see something that, you know, you haven't seen it. You haven't seen it because you're a student. You haven't gotten hurt. You know, you've had the best. You live at the University Towers. You live, you know, in the best dorms. You no has sufrido, so you can't identify. But when you get to Corpus, you're gonna taste the chocolate, son." And he did. He did, and he has opened his eyes a lot. He took a job with HEB, and he saw a lot of things, you know, that affected.
Why was the Guerra family business jewelry store's name Green Jewelers?
Okay, my ex-husband Jesse Guerra, su mamá Dora Elizondo Guerra, okay, se casó con un judío after her divorce, you know, David Greenberg, and he was like a Russian immigrant that had settled in Kansas. And then he came down with his family, and they started that chain of jewelry stores.
They dropped the bird. Yeah,
se casó con él, y él tenía 9 meses at the time. So he kept the Guerra. You know, my father-in-law always wanted to adopt him, you know, but his mother wouldn't let him. So he stayed Jesse Guerra. And, in the 70s, we worked real hard together. We used to do the Fiestas Patrias at Mission County Park, and you used to be there.
Can you keep talking if I ask something, if I walk away here?
Sure.
I gotta get a phone call.
Sure.
Can you tell us about that?
Yes.
Just talk to the camera.
Yes, we used to, in the 1970s, we used to do the Fiestas Patrias at Mission County Park, and we felt that there was nothing, siempre ha existido el cónsul general en San Antonio, pero la gente de nosotros, la gente del pueblo, la gente pobre, no se sentían cómodos de ir a las ceremonias que tenía el cónsul, o a las asambleas que hacía el cónsul de México. Entonces nosotros nos organizamos y hacíamos las fiestas patrias. En esta época andaba José Ángel Gutiérrez, Mario Compián, Mario Cantú, Darío Chapa, yo, Francis, y mi esposo Jesse Guerra. Me recuerdo que una vez trajimos al ballet folclórico, trajimos a Cuco Sánchez, trajimos a Lola Beltrán y muchas otras artistas que vinieron y cantaban con nosotros y nos ayudaban a celebrar el 16. como le estaba diciendo
Semana
aquí,
de la Raza, ¿viste?
Yes, Semana de la Raza.
Before Guadalupe Cultural Center and
no había nada para nosotros.
Mission County Park and
sí,
y never San Jose Park. I mean,
no. Yo me acuerdo cuando Albert Peña nos dejaba tener el
right.
en Mission County Park, pero cuando él perdió, justamente nos corrió.
Sí,
nos corrió.
Fuimos a Camargo Park.
Y después nos fuimos a Camargo y después resultamos aquí en el mercado.
También,
yeah. Y ahora todavía las Ladies Lulac 648, ellas son las que hacen las fiestas, que ahora le dicen las fiestas patrias. Pero era la Semana de la Raza
right.
en aquel entonces. Y hacíamos los tiquetes para la comida y la cerveza en el print shop de Mario Compián y Black Diamond, Rudy García. And ellos hacían all the... We've always had wonderful artists in our culture. And we had that time we had Rudy Diamond García. Nos hacía t-shirts with a screening. Apenas we had learned about this. We had learned that we could make our own t-shirts. Y le dábamos shine con las... como dicen, right? Con las t-shirts. And we were so proud. We were a proud raza. I feel we still are. We just have to get it together again. We have to wake up.
Okay, when did you come back from Corpus? Did you come back married or divorced?
No, I came back. I divorced my husband, and I came back. I went to work at Project Ser.
What years?
1977, and I stayed there till 1980. At that time, Leon Hernandez was the director of Project Ser. And so he had an opening, and it was just a follow-up specialist in the manpower department. And I wanted to do job developing and job placement. And he said, no, that's just for men. He said, we don't have anybody at the SER national level that does that. And he said, we find that men are more effective. And he had like 5 job developers, and they also did job placement. And so I would go and screen people to bring into their programs that they had there. And I would say, let me look at your list. And they would say, you know what, we haven't placed these people yet, and we have only such and such a time to place. And I'd say, do you want me to help you? And so I did. I did. I would start it. And then Leon got wind of it, that I was helping these guys place their workload. And so then... they got some funds in, and he said, you know what, I'm going to make you the first job developer that SED has ever had nationally. And I became a job developer.
So much for job women placement. Can't do this.
And a job placement, and I was 100, I would hit 100%.
I asked you this earlier about the prejudice because of gender, and you said you didn't really run into that. Is this the first time,
But I'm saying not in the campaigns. You know what I'm saying? When we were But like they're at the job, yes. Like Leon said, well, you know, I just feel comfortable with the guys, and the city council, you know, funds us and blah blah blah, and I don't want to rock the boat. But then, you know, I didn't care. I just saw that the people needed to get placed, and I felt that I could do it. So at that time, my boss was Noé de la Rosa, who is now. I spoke to him the other day. He is at Texas A&I Kingsville. He's in the financial aid office. And we used to work together, and he had great faith in me that I could do it. And he said, you know, Leon, you need to let her do it. Just let her do it. Don't be a male chauvinist. And so I did. They gave me the title, and they gave me the pay that went with it, and ya te voy. And I believed in SER, you know. I believed in what they did to bring the people in, train them, educate them, send them on to college. Give them a work skill where they could go to college and continue working, you know. It's like if you're just going to start a business, you don't quit the job you have and go. You got to do it gradually. And that's what we used to do there. And I would work with the women that would come in there, get their GED, would get them involved, like with typing skills, to see if we could get them into some kind of an office atmosphere. And then we'd get them into like a medical transcribing program, so that we could get them to become, working in doctor's offices. Then I'd go to doctor's offices and I'd say, you know, I have a person that can not only be a receptionist, but she can run your office like a general manager. By the time they left us, they were ready.
Were you involved in any community organizations?
I was involved with LULAC.
LULAC.
With LULAC. I was a great LULAC girl.
When did that start?
Since I was about, I guess, we started with LULAC Council Number 2.
That's the downtown group.
Yeah, with Tom Sandoval. Well, actually, it was, ¿cómo se llama? Julio Delgado. He was a teamster. And he knew my father, Señor Delgado. And he knew my father, and he had his children in LULAC. So I guess he and my father had met politically. And so he got us involved, the kids. We had what was called the junior LULACers. So hacíanos acá en el barrio y le hacíanos a LULAC.
Did you have any notions of when did you get the notion that there were a difference between, say, GF Forum, LULAC, PASO, Unity Council, Mayo, Raza Unida, Democratic Party, Teamsters, AFL? They're all different. When did you begin to realize that you had to choose up what your line was going to be?
Well, in my heart, you know, in my heart, okay, I've always been a Democrat in my heart, because I was raised like that with the Democratic view that, you know, that, how can I explain this to you? With the pride of being a Democrat, you know? And it was not until, well, that was like with what my father had shown us, like I told you, my father was a very intelligent person. My father was a scholar. My father used to read 12 novels in 1 week. He was an avid reader. And my father used to make us read a lot. I remember when I was a little girl that we used to get the weekly reader in the summer. And I would wait for my little newspaper to come in. In ese tiempo, it was 15 cents. And I would ask my daddy, did you send for my weekly reader? Did I get it today? It was in the summer. And he'd say, yes, I have it right here. And
did you all speak English or Spanish at all?
No, Español. I didn't learn English until I went to school. In first grade, you know, and we were not allowed to speak English at home because my father didn't want us to lose our enunciation, our, you know, our vocabulary. And mi papá, you know, he was very proud of his children, of himself, of what he had come to this country. Él se había venido cuando tenía 5 años para acá. Y fíjate, venía de familias que estaban bien en Lampazos. Y se vino como un niño que había perdido sus papás. Y mis abuelos no lo encontraron hasta que ya estaba grande. Y se vino a San Fernando Cathedral. He was going to study to be a priest. Y lo mandaron a decir su primer misa y no la pudo decir. It was during the revolution. So se vino, se regresó, and he got married.
Did he ever tell you what he did that?
He was afraid.
Of what?
I guess he was afraid of getting killed over there. You know, se regresó. Pero cuando se regresó, he had a mission. Y toda su vida fue dar y dar y dar y dar hasta que no tengas nada, porque no te lo vas a llevar contigo.
So you think that's where you got your idea about solid being a Democrat?
Yeah, from seeing everything. But like I said, it wasn't until then that I got involved. And then the students in the late 60s, okay, that we were in that age group, and that we began to see in college what was happening and everything, what was happening in Crystal City, what was happening with the farm workers and people coming out and talking about, you know, like Cesar Chavez. Oh, I remember one time when I met Cesar Chavez, that had to have been my most beautiful experience in my life. I will always remember him.
What was that?
Andaba con Darío Chapa y Ed Pastor, who's now the congressman of the Hispanic Caucus, the chairperson, right?
Yes.
From Phoenix, Arizona. Traía las mechas hasta acá, Pastor. Sometimes when I see him, I tell him, hey, I remember you, when. He's a great guy. And nos pagaba el Center for Community Change, Othello Pollard, would fund a program at MOC, and we were paid by the Center for Community Change. So Othello Pollard, who was at the center, who was our boss, put a workshop for us, like a Saul Alinsky workshop in Los Angeles. And that's where I met Ed Pastor, because he was with a group from Guadalupe, Arizona. He had just graduated from ASU. And so andábamos todos trabajando en lo mismo. Y nos mandaron a Los Angeles. And then from there, nos llevaron, Othello Pollard took us to meet Cesar Chavez. And we went to where he was. He took us all over L.A., showed us. And I remember him coming out in white pants and a white shirt, sandals. and he had beautiful hands. His hands. I remember something about his hands when I shook hands with him. And I remember the light, the tremendous light that he had. I will never forget it. I will never forget that light that que le vi a ese hombre. Y cuando él se murió, I felt that there would never be anyone that would fill his shoes. I knew that the strife of the farm workers would be over. I felt a great sadness. I felt that even though they had said his son-in-law would take over at that time, I just remember that announcement coming through, and I knew that no one could fill those shoes. I knew that nadie le iba a dar como él le dio a la causa. Y todo cuando él ayunaba, I would pray for him that God would give him the strength and the perseverance. And there were times when his health would be in danger, and I would ask God to take care of him because he was one of our people. But I always felt that he was like a Muhammad Gandhi. I felt like he was like Anwar Sadat from Egypt. I felt that he was somebody like that. He also was one of my heroes. And I think of him often. I think of him often when I go and I see the fields. I see the produce. And like not too long ago, the strawberries that were poisoned with the pesticides. And I think, you know, it's there. It's just, it's a dormant cause, and somebody needs to breathe that spirit back into it. When he died, believe me that I felt like running and taking up that banner. I felt that I could have done it. I did. But they said, you know, his son-in-law, nobody knew me really, but I felt that I could have done it. I really felt that I could have done it because I could feel his spirit. I could feel his spirit that he was sad.
Who do you think are our leaders today? Who do you look to for leadership today?
I feel that there's a lot of sadness in our Democratic Party because we haven't had a good, we don't have a good Democratic chairperson. I don't feel that we have we haven't had a strong one. I remember when Joyce Peters,
Are you talking locally?
Yes.
Okay.
I'm talking from Bexar County. When we had a Democratic chairperson by the name of Joyce Peters, she had 500 women. And we used to meet like the second Tuesday at the Gunner Hotel, and we couldn't, you know, there wasn't even enough room for all of us, you know. And she kept us involved at the state level, at the national level, you know. That was in the Kennedy era. And I feel that right now there's no leadership, period. That the views of the Democrat and the Republican, they're so close that it's almost like they're shaking hands. There is, you know, it's like yesterday in public radio I heard a woman say that she didn't know that she couldn't differentiate between the party that killed babies and the party that helped to kill them. You know? So this should tell us something about the parties. That there's the views, there's just a hairline. I don't know. Somebody's not doing their job. And I feel that the leaders, when you ask them to get out there and talk to the people, they don't want to go out in the streets. They want to do it on TV. And when they do, they bring out all the negative about the other person. They don't say what they're for.
At the state level, who are our leaders?
Well, I would say that Ciro. I would say that Ciro Rodriguez right now. I have seen Ciro walking the streets. Hi. I have seen Ciro walking the streets, getting more involved. I see him at a lot of meetings. I've been seeing a lot of Joe Bernal. I've been seeing a lot of Joe Bernal this past couple of years, him coming back out in the streets again. I think Joe had taken a laid-back position, but I think now that Senator Bernal is coming back, I think that he feels that fire in his belly again. I'm beginning to see a lot of like Maria Berisabal coming back and getting more involved.
Nationally?
Nationally, I don't know. I'm very disappointed. Like, I have to be very candid and honest with you with Cisneros. I feel that this was a person that could have helped us more and didn't. I was involved with a group here on the west side. It's our Casas Resident Council. And Chad Kemp, who was a Republican at that time, gave us a grant for $89,000 to teach the public housing residents about empowering and empowering them where they could have their own management companies and help them get their own contracts there, painting contracts and plumbing and carpentry, because there's a lot of skilled people there. And when we tried to go to our Secretary HUD, and if you take a drive right here, you can still see the Alasan Apache courts falling apart, the Via Viramende court, San Juan. We shouldn't have that anymore, Jose. We shouldn't have that anymore. You know, instead of taking those billions and sending them up north and northeast, northwest, in Section 8, he should have helped the people from where San Antonio started, on the west side. Y vas y todavía ves la gente and senior citizens living in there, and four generations still there. You know, I think it's sad. And to think that we still have somebody from our own, somebody that supposedly prides himself living in the west side, growing up in the west side, even when he was mayor, and to represent us as Secretary of HUD, I think it's sad.
In the 80s, what did you do politically? What were you involved with, even at work?
In the 80s, I was involved with LULAC, okay? We did a lot of things with LULAC. We were working with trying to get more Mexican-Americans into jobs. Like, for instance, when Jose de Lara was the last LULAC president that I supported. We don't have LULAC anymore.
You didn't support the women?
Well, yes.
Robles or Rosales?
Well, no.
Neither one of them?
No.
That was history, the first woman to lead LULAC.
In the beginning, in the beginning, we were together. When we first started with LULAC, we were all together. Just like I told you, when we were all in the barrio, it was like a coalition. There was just one cause, and LULAC was one cause.
Well, but LULAC had segregation LULAC for women
and young people.
When did that end?
I would say when Velez took over, there was a big rift, and, you know, he was not the right person for us.
No, I mean, there was segregation in LULAC. Women were auxiliaries, the kids were in junior LULAC. When did that end, that segregation?
Well, they still have it. They still have the junior LULACers.
Right.
And they still have, but it's
you don't
no
have to
longer,
be 21 no, to join no, LULAC. No, 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 you could be 18 and join
that's
LULAC.
That's right. I would say that ended like in the late 70s, that ended in the late 70s. And now, for instance, the LULAC group that I belong to, okay, just at the local level, there's still all women.
For the record, we're outdoors, it's 102 degrees on the 4th of July, 1996 in San Jose Mission. But that's why we're having trouble. But go ahead, the LULAC
Pero ya no,
history.
Pues como te estoy diciendo que ya no hay, really, there is no LULAC. Go to it, like today they're in Boston. And I would grant to say that I bet they don't have 15 corporations there. When we used to have a group of about 3,000, I mean, they're lucky they have 300.
Well, unfortunately, it's going to be blamed on the women. Helen Robles,
Belen Robles.
It had to be a woman, either Rosa Rosales or Belen Robles. That was history. And I noticed you said you didn't support Belen, I suppose. I'm not trying to put words in your mouth, but what happened here?
Well, the first time that the first go round for when we had the convention in Albuquerque, everything ended. There was no election. The Velez people just took it over, and Belen was part of that group. Sally Martinez was part of that group.
This is when the Filipinos are at it, and they're classified as Hispanic. And Mario Robledo says that that's legal, that the Filipinos were Hispanic.
It was a big mess, but look, we hurt each other.
And now this man is indicted and convicted, no?
A guy from Las Vegas.
He's in prison.
Right.
He's in prison. His girlfriend, I believe, went to prison too. I'm not sure where she wound up, but we heard later that que ella también, la señora que le andaba ayudando, and they were using the LULAC number to do their own amnesty work that was his company. Anyway, it was a very sad day for us that day in Albuquerque. Se acabó LULAC. It's never been the same. It split us completely. A lot of people walked out, and I would say that those people that walked out never came back. If you did not support Velez, you were excommunicated from LULAC. He brought a lot of discord into LULAC. And now what's happened is that LULAC doesn't have a voice. You don't see LULAC up in the front.
Well, there's some people that say that Senator Laxalt was involved with that, Nevada, trying to push that candidacy of Velez, and the Republicans were right behind all of that.
I don't know anything about that. You know, I can't say okay. A or nay, but that was the last of our LULAC days. Really.
Of your days.
Of our days, yeah. Of our days working together, because at that time, like I said, we were still very involved in endorsing affirmative action. In fact, Jose de Lara was very instrumental in getting one of the first Hispanic or Chicano vice presidents, Mike de la Garza, for HEB here in San Antonio.
Well, what did you do after you got disillusioned with LULAC, your own personal life?
Well, we tried to form another group. Right after that, we tried to form another group, but it was very hard. It was very hard because everybody felt like you had been kicked in the stomach, and to get back into that mode, it was like how the Raza Unida felt when, you know, Ramsey got in trouble, and you feel like you lost your baby, you know, and that's how we felt, and we just could not get another group going. So we supported our local LULAC council at the local level, whoever wanted to get involved at the national could get involved. But really and truly, I don't foresee those days coming back. I could be wrong.
In the 90s, what were you doing and what did you get involved with?
In the 90s, I have just been involved with community action groups. Like right now, I'm involved with this committee.
Now, when you say
with Southwest Voter.
Just got involved, you mean you took a break or you have been involved with these?
No.
What did you mean by those words?
No, that I've always played like behind the scene person, okay? I help organize. I've been involved all along with voter registration. I've never stopped.
Officially with the Southwest Voter or on your own?
No, on our own. And then in the beginning, we were with Cuando Andaba Willy Velasquez with Southwest Voter for many years. And then we continued. After he died, you know, we continued working with Southwest Voter. And then recently we come back to work with Lydia Camarillo and Southwest Voter.
What do you think of that as an institution and that as a project?
Well, I think they're on the right track. If we could get, like for instance, if we could get like the new U.S. citizens, imagínate, and the students that are turning 18 and empower them.
But they have neither one of those projects. They don't do citizenship, and they don't have, MTV goes after the youth. They don't have it.
Well, July. I think this July, they're gonna have a campaign to go after the 18-year-olds. They're going to have a strong drive.
But they're out of school. Where are they going to find them?
Well, they're everywhere. We know where to find them.
Dances,
we know where.
Concerts.
There's a lot of places that we can find them. We know where they hang out. You know, we're doing a lot of block walking. We're going door to door.
But that's you.
Yeah, and but with Southwest Voter.
I see.
Like Johnny Rodriguez that I introduced to you earlier. We just started those house programs, and we're doing precinct by precinct. So we're block walking every weekend. Friday nights, we do a house party Thursday night.
But
Friday
that's you nights. Teaching them how to do that.
No, ellos también.
So how do you organize? También. Tell me, how do you organize? What tips do you have to organize? What makes our people move?
Well, I am not of the belief that you have to give them beer and tamales, okay? To me, that's like stereotyzing Mexicanos. That's all we do is eat and drink tamales. I believe that our people are ready. They just need to be tapped. I think they've seen so many cuts and so many things that have affected them in such a negative way. I believe that they're ready to go forward. One way that, like I said, that we're organizing them is to go in there. We find out who we go. We walk the neighborhood, and we find out because people tell you, "Pues ya habló con so and so, ya habló con el señor Terrazas, ¿y qué le dijo?" And then we find out that el señor Terrazas is an important person in that street. So we come back to Señor Terrazas and we'll ask him, you know, what do you see here? And everybody's told us about you, or, you know, the people themselves will tell us. We'll go to el Señor Terrazas and ask him, what you need here? And the only way that you're going to get it is you have to organize your precinct. You have to organize your street. And that's one way that we get them involved. What is it? ¿Qué es lo que les molesta a ellos? Que se va a venir, que there's una cantina ahí that they don't want, that's right there in the middle of their neighborhood. So don't call me to get that cantina out. I'll show you what you have to do. What is the process? You know, what is the process that you have to do to get them to move? Or who? And we tell them they're not going to listen to you if you just go by yourself and go talk to them at City Hall. You have to take everybody. You have to get petitions. Well, how do I do a petition? This is what you do. We give them, we'll sit with them if we have to and show them how to write it. They write it themselves. They have kids that have computers. You know, they can't do it themselves. You know, we have a lot, like, for instance, the lawyers, that Peter Valdecillo that's involved, and the law students.
That's the Civil Rights Project, huh?
Yeah, Immigration and Refugee Affairs, pero even the law students from St. Mary's University, ahorita ellos también andan, you know, getting more and more involved in a lot of things.
There is a lot of young Mecha groups sprouting up in San Antonio. Why is that?
Because of the need that they feel that our people are lacking. And I hope that we see the days like when, you know, we were students and we were out there. And I think that those documentaries on the civil rights movement that they showed not too long ago, that made a big impact with the students now. A lot of the students that are out there are students that are getting their master's degree that are going to be Jose Angeles.
Well, we're sitting here in San Jose. I don't remember activities in San Jose Mission. It's
never.
always at the
Mission County Park.
That's right. So
Camargo Park.
Right. So what made you come here, and what's this place all about? This is a nice place.
Okay, this is the amphitheater. We're behind Mission San Jose. I felt that although this is federal property, Jose, this is also hallowed ground. And I felt that this belonged to us. And it was a little difficult to get this event here at the Mission. This is the first time they've ever had a voter education seminar here. And we felt that this ground belongs to us. You know.
What are some of the difficulties you had?
For instance, we had to get $1 million liability insurance rider. We had to get a sponsor. And we don't even
How much did that cost you?
Well, I don't know. We had a sponsor for it. I don't know what it cost. But still, you know, we don't have any liquor here. There's no dancing. It's just an educational seminar.
Well, the music that's been in the background all this time is through a big sound truck out there. What is all that from?
Okay, that's a Showmobile.
From?
And San Antonio Parks and Recreation.
How much they charge you for that?
$400.
$400.
$400.
And it comes with the speakers and the sound and all that?
No, well, the band, they decided to do it on their own. The Fantasy Sound Machine. You might want to interview them and ask them why they decided to get involved. Because they have been very effective in coming out to the community and doing this on their own. The two guys, Eddie Flores and the other gentleman, I don't know what his name is, but they're very supportive. And when we try to get some other groups to come, you know, they want to get paid. And they say, well, I'm sorry, but, you know, I can do it, but my band can't do it because we have to pay them. Pero ellos, hasta ahorita, they've been very supportive of anybody's cause. They'll go out and they'll play. It's the Fantasy Sound Machine. And in fact, Eddie has some children, three little girls, and they're all dancers. They dance in a group, and they dance Mexican dances. And so I guess it's in his blood. He wants the tradition to continue.
Now, you gave an award to a young lady who sang the
Chrissy Mendelson.
She sang the
Star Spangled Banner, the national anthem.
And the Mexican one.
No canto, she didn't sing the Mexican one here, but she does both.
Yeah, well, that's what you gave her the award for.
Yeah, we gave her the award because, she does it unconditionally. You just tell her to show up, and she goes.
Who's her father?
Les Mendelson. He used to be a civil rights attorney.
I remember him.
And now, I don't know what kind of law he practices, but that's their only child, and they're very proud of her. She's 17 years old.
They gave an award also to the firefighters.
Yes.
What was that about?
The firefighters, this group that's with us, that's their non-political group, ALS, for the first time, like I said, an unprecedented event that they gave the flags. They've been committed to give 3,000 flags at every ceremony from June 26th to the end of the year. They're going to be attending the naturalization ceremonies here in San Antonio. And they're also going to be helping us with voter registration, and they'll also be giving them their first United States flag. So that's why, you know.
Now who put together all this coalition?
The Committee to Educate on Voting Rights, I did.
And you also got some hot dogs here, and ice machines, and porta potties. Where'd you get all this stuff? How much did
it
cost you?
Different groups donated. My husband and I donated those pictures. And we donated the flyers. The other groups, everybody pitched in, everybody believed in it. And even though all the other groups, you know, everybody's like I said, different backgrounds, different mentalities, but everybody with the same ideals that you have to educate them.
You had the program, I didn't attend all of it, but I saw some elected officials giving a talk. You have a lot of involvement of elected officials?
Okay, the elected officials that were here are not running for office. Okay, and some were Republican, some were Democrat.
Now, is that on purpose? You didn't want people that are running for office?
No, we didn't, because we didn't want to endorse anybody. We cannot endorse anybody. But we said that anybody was welcome so long as you were not. We did invite the mayor and the city council people, but they had other functions.
We had a former candidate for mayor, no?
Kay Turner.
Turner?
Mm-hmm. She's very involved, but the water is very dear to her. And she's very involved with the saving of the water.
You are supporting Victor Morales, yes or no?
As a person?
Yes.
As a person, I can't speak, like I said, for my committee. But as a person, I endorse Victor Morales.
What have you been doing on his behalf? Or what have you tried to do?
As a person, right now I'm not actively working for him, okay, because I got involved with this committee and I could not do that, you know, because I couldn't be supporting any candidates, okay? But we did get a group of people together to put together some bumper stickers for him here in San Antonio.
Yes. Take some work.
Yes, it's good to see you, Ralph. Thank you for coming.
Good
speech. Good speech.
How are you?
I'm fine.
You're looking great, isn't he?
Yes. He looks wonderful.
Let me be a bummer. Everything going well.
Let me turn this off.
Oh, shit.
A lot of people that have come by to say hello and talk. I forgot really where we were. I think I was asking about the 90s and asking you about why we're here.
Yeah, why we're here.
Asking about the sound. But I really forgot the point that you had a lot of difficulties to get to this park. This is federal property?
This is federal property. This is what's called the separation of church and state.
Are all the missions federal property?
Yes. They're
the land.
They're national historical parks.
Right.
So the government.
But the churches operate the actual
the
church.
The archdiocese. The church belongs to the archdiocese. The rest belongs to the government.
Wow. Wow. And
I'll see you soon. I'll call you, but I'll see you soon.
I think we better hurry up.
Yeah.
You got a lot of things to attend to. And
thank
you for you know interrupting your day here. Well,
it's been great seeing you.
I've lost
it's
it
been
here.
Great. You were asking me about you had asked me about Victor
Morales,
and,
right?
Yeah, Victor Morales. And
you put together a committee. What happened? How come it hasn't gotten off the ground?
Well, I believe that he has his people here in San Antonio that are working.
Who is that?
Well, I don't know if he's working through the Democratic headquarters. I'm not sure if he's working through the Democratic headquarters. I believe there was a gentleman here by the name of Fred Garza that was working with him, a general contractor. And before I started this committee, we had offered him a headquarters, you know, unconditionally, that he could use. And
you got that?
Yes.
Who'd you get it from?
Well, my brother and I own that property.
Who's your brother?
Thomas Anthony Guajardo. He's a civil rights attorney. And we had that property at 2502 Buena Vista. And we had wanted him to go in there. And the students from UTSA, Kevin Lopez and Fred Garza, were going to run that campaign headquarters. We were just going to donate it. And I don't know if he had decided, you know, we never heard back, if he had decided to go in to another area. But we had felt that it would be good, even if he went, you know, other areas in San Antonio, it wouldn't hurt him to have a headquarters on the west side as well. And we wanted the people to know that he had come from the barrio, and that he was uno de la gente nuestra, and that we felt comfortable with him, you know, that we could work with him, and that he could work with us. So after, you know, that I was asked to head this committee, I had to you know, break off. And I'm no longer involved with his campaign, you know, per se. I haven't seen him lately. The last time we saw him was when they had the opening of the Democratic headquarters, and they had the swearing in for the Bexar County Democratic chair, Walter Martinez. I saw Victor there. He gave a real good speech, and he had a wonderful reception. He was looking good. And at that time, we thought, you know, that we were still going to do that headquarters for him. But I don't know. It didn't pan out, you know. I guess when you start a campaign, it just gets, especially a Senate seat, it gets to be big, and a lot of people come into play, and he has to do what he has to do.
So what's next on your agenda?
To continue this.
Voter registration or citizenship?
I don't register them to become citizens. We just register them to become voters, the new citizens, and to continue educating them.
This block party thing. What do you call it?
House committee meetings. To show them how to vote, you know, how to use the electoral process.
You got that also
advantage.
At that sound machine, no? You got an election booth there from somebody?
Yes.
Who is that?
That's the Bexar County Elections Office.
You bring them out here too?
Well, this is the first time.
They love you because they're getting paid double time, for working on a holiday?
I don't know if they're getting paid. I don't know. Well, that's Eddie Navarro is the head of Bexar County Elections Office. And, you know, I don't know if he, I didn't ask him, you know, but they came out. And so I'm glad they did, because it didn't matter if we had four or five, but they can spread the word.
And the music is who? The ones you asked me to do?
Fantasy Sound Machine.
But who are they?
Eddie Flores, and I don't know who the other gentleman
Why
is.
Why are they here?
Because they believe, like...
Because you asked them.
I asked him, and he has three little girls that dance, like I told you.
Yes.
And he believes in the cause. He brings his family, his mother, mother-in-law. Se trae toda la familia. And he says, you know, he does this for... He has another job, and then he does this sound system, his band on the side. But he says this is a way of him giving back. You know, the La Raza helped him pay for his equipment by booking him for his entertainment, and this is a time that he gives back, and we're very honored and happy to have him.
Well, thank you for your time, and
thank you.
A little bit of your hot dog
line. Thank you.
Yes.
Yes. Thank you. It's great seeing you.
All right.
Dios te bendiga. I better get back.
Ándale. Go ahead. I'm gonna just film where you headed. Y se acabó.